My poem, The State of Virginia After Southampton, grew out of research I did for my dissertation in the mid-90s. I was reading Herbert Aptheker's compendium of all kinds of source material related to Nat Turner's rebellion, and the spark for the poem came from a letter written several months after the rebellion by a white Virginia farmer to someone in Cincinnati, I've forgotten exactly who. The italicized lines in the poem were lifted verbatim from the letter, but most of the rest of the poem is imagined. I'm quite fond in general of reading the letters and diaries of ordinary people who were minor participants in or witnesses to historical events. In such documents, I often find an immediacy, an unfiltered quality that is rarely present in history books or in the writings of more famous people. But I was particularly drawn to this particular letter for several reasons. The restraint, for example, the indirection with which it's written, the fact that this farmer never comes out and says he's petrified, but rather he simply talks about the trivial noises that now, post-Nat Turner, keep him awake at night. And of course, the language of it appealed to me as well. Corn song, for example. I still don't know exactly what that means, to be honest, but I love the sound of it, especially followed immediately by hog call. And I liked that the cat in the dining room, which is usually more of an emblem of domestic tranquility, becomes, to the hypersensitive ears of this farmer, his potential murderer. One wonders, of course, how much the farmer's fear is augmented by feelings of guilt. It's hard, for me at least, not to think of Poe's telltale heart here. But I didn't want to push the issue of guilt. I certainly didn't want to turn the poem into a didactic history lesson, kind of moralizing condemnation or anything like that. There's a place for that sort of thing, I suppose, but it isn't poetry. Rather, I wanted to rely on images to do the work and to dwell for a little while in that farmer's ulti-human fear. I wanted my poem, in other words, to be as restrained and indirect as the farmer's letter. One of the ways in which I departed from my source material was in changing the farmer's friend to his sister, which I did because it seemed to me that a more intimate relationship would charge the letter perhaps with more significance. And also, if the recipient of the letter is his sister, that raises the question, it seems to me, of what she's doing in Cincinnati, free soil, after all. I hoped that her presence there might suggest the existence of an ideological as well as geographic rift between the farmer and his sister. And I imagined that rift forcing the farmer to pull back at the end of his letter, to fall back on small talk. The only other specific historical source for this poem, as far as I recall, were the original confessions of Nat Turner as they were supposedly given to a man named Thomas R. Gray. The wrestling match between the farmer's son and the cook's son in my poem is intended to provide the faintest of possible echoes of the battle between white spirits and black spirits that Nat Turner claims to have seen in a vision. I didn't want to make that an explicit allusion, obviously, but I wanted there to be a kind of faint echo of it. So that's the genesis of that poem. It's the only poem that grew directly out of my dissertation research. I've always had a special affection for it, and it was also the first of what's now become a group of historical poems that I've been writing since then, and which I hope will form my second book.